My talk is actually not on the current financial crisis, and in fact, it's on countries that have been systematically isolated from the global economy. But I argue that as they went through economic isolation, there were certain employment patterns that emerged as they were economically isolated, and that we might be able to learn something from those countries. I'm going to sort of skip through this because this is pretty basic, but I want to put the main point is obviously globalization involves this connectivity between trade and finance, and a lot of people talk about the benefits, the fact that more women are employed, although that's debated in the literature as to whether that's such a good thing, as you just pointed out. And then there's this question of costs and the winners and losers, and we also have this problem of increased economic volatility. And I think the other point that I think is important is that globalization also increases the vulnerability to economic isolation. So there's two points I want to make. One has to do with the fact that as you globalize, you become more susceptible to things like sanctions and other forms of punitive measures that the U.S. or other countries may want to place on you, and that when the possibility of trade reduces, there are gendered implications of that. So I'm going to look at how economic isolation can tell us something about the financial crisis. Can the economies facing sanctions tell us anything about the current crisis? I'm going to skip over a lot of this, too, because I think all this background is fairly well developed by other people. So the main point I want to focus on is the fourth one, that countries facing sanctions have had their ability to export and receive foreign direct investment curtailed. I mean, that's the point of sanctions, is to cut you off from the global economy. And so I'm looking at how that shock is gendered. The countries that I'm going to look at are Iraq, which was under multilateral UN sanctions, and then Iran, which was under U.S., who's still under U.S. unilateral sanctions, and then the Palestinian case, which is not technically called sanctions, but I've made arguments elsewhere that in the case of the way that Israel controls the Palestinian economy, it looks very similar to sanctions. And I should say here that I noticed that we had an Iranian scholar who was talking about Indian data. We had an Indian scholar talking about U.S. data. Now we have a U.S. scholar talking about Iranian data. So we've come full circle. There are, of course, many other countries that have faced sanctions: Cuba, Sudan, North Korea, Congo, Zimbabwe. So I think that some of this could be expanded to other country contexts. But I work on the Middle East, so obviously that's what I'm focusing on. And just because I know that sometimes we run out of times, I decided I'm going to actually summarize my findings now, so you'll know my absolute findings, and then if I run out of time, at least I've told you my main thing. In all three of the cases, Iraq, Palestine, and Iran, women's labor force participation rates were negatively impacted. And I want to say here that economic theory obviously is ambiguous on this point. If you face economic hardship, the question is, do women enter the labor market or do women leave the labor market? And I was expecting, and sort of anecdotal evidence suggests that in the case of Iraq, Palestine, and Iran, that economic hardship would push women into the labor market. But in fact, my data suggests that the opposite happened, that women were actually pushed out of the labor market as a result of economic isolation. So I think that's by itself an interesting point. Particularly in the Palestinian case, there was a return to subsistence agriculture that took place, and there's been some discussion of other people, too, that we're expecting perhaps some return to subsistence agriculture as this financial crisis unrolls. And particularly important, I think, people haven't talked a lot directly about class, but obviously it's been an underlying issue. The less skilled, poorer women were the most likely to lose jobs because they are often more likely to be in the traded sectors. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in my detailed analysis. And the other thing that hasn't really been discussed yet, is the defeminization of industries that can happen. If there's very few jobs to be had, do women get pushed out of the few jobs that are available? And so men are willing to take jobs that they wouldn't have taken before. And so you get a defeminization effect. And again, I found some defeminization effect as well in my research. The other thing is there's been some discussion of the role that the government can play. And I think we have to be very detailed in terms of how we talk about government job creation, because certain types of job creation benefit some people and other types of job creation benefit other people. So I definitely am in favor of a more active government role, but I think we have to be very specific when we talk about what types of government jobs or what types of stimulation we're talking about. It's not just a matter of the government expanding. It's a matter of the government expanding in particular ways. Because in my data, I find that it's educated women who have access to government jobs, and it's less educated women are losing jobs, but the people gaining jobs from the expanded government sector are more educated women. And obviously, there's already been some discussion of this from others. The trends vary considerably based on what type of economy you had. If you had an economy that was dependent on manufacturing exports, that's going to have a different impact than if you have a different type of economy. And I think it's interesting, particularly interesting to study Iran, because Iran is a country where labor force participation of women is rising despite sanctions and despite large structural adjustment programs. So interesting to think about what's been happening in Iran, which has been isolated from the global economy, but where we've seen women's labor force participation taking off in recent years. This was one of the graphs that originally captured my attention. If you look at the bottom line, you see that the average increase in labor force participation in the Middle East has for women has been about 9.2 percentage points over the last 10 years. But if you look at Iraq and the Palestinian territories, you see that that number is negative. You've actually seen a decline in female labor force participation. The two other countries that see negative are Sudan, which is another country that's gone through a certain type of crisis, and Turkey, which is a completely different case. So I won't talk about the Turkish case. But it's pretty stark that the countries that have experienced rising labor force participation, I mean, falling labor force participation, are primarily the ones that have been in conflict. And this is another way of looking at this. This bottom line is the Palestinian territories, completely flat. Labor force participation has not risen at all from the early 1980s. So we have complete stagnation of labor force participation. Iraq has seen a little bit of going up. I put Jordan in because Jordan is a very good comparison to the Palestinian territories because it's a very similar culture and similar economy, but you see that the Jordanian female labor force participation rate has taken off, whereas the Palestinian is flat. Again, Iran really stands out. Iran is the blue line. So Iran was fairly flat and has really taken off in recent years. And the red and the pink, the red is the average for the region, and the pink is if you take out the negative numbers and just look at the countries that had a positive trend. So you see that Iraq and Palestine are definitely way below the trend. Iran has crossed the trend, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. This is what people get. This is the data for Iran, though, that captured people's attention. The graph I just showed was after 1980. The big drop in Iranian labor force participation was between 1976 and 1986. These are census data. And so there was a dip and then a rise in the Iranian labor force participation. A second set of data I find interesting, again, I've highlighted the ones that I find the most compelling. If you look at the rank of manufacturing, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth column over, I hope everybody can see that. Algeria, people talk about anyway, it's a high manufacturing, but the Iranian economy, actually, a lot of women were working in manufacturing in Iran, and people don't talk about that as much as they do Algeria and Morocco, which you see are in the top two. And the Palestinian territories were also actually, for the Middle East, one of the biggest, one of the few countries where manufacturing was actually employing a lot of women. But as you see, what's happened with the Palestinian territories is a huge decline. Iran has also had a huge decline. If you look from 33% to 23.4%, so women have lost manufacturing jobs relative to other jobs, but Iran is still number one in terms of manufacturing, in terms of manufacturing being the sector that employs the most women. These are, if you look at 100% of women in employment, where they work. So in Iran, agriculture remains fairly large, but manufacturing is the biggest sector, and it's been declining. In the Palestinian territories, agriculture and education are two big sectors, but manufacturing has also been declining. So those were the things that captured my attention. I'm only going to spend a few minutes on Iraq because they're not very good micro-level data. But what's happened to Iraq is that labor force participation rates pretty much have stagnated for women. Now, the anthropological studies for Iraq suggest that educated women were the ones who exited the labor market because of a decline in wages and benefits, and less educated women were driven into the labor market. But we actually don't have good micro data to even confirm that. Iran is the story where there's more data. 1979 marks the revolution, but also the imposition of sanctions. So most of the analyses that have been done have focused on the revolution as the big turning point, but they haven't really looked at the role that sanctions might have played in shifting female labor force participation. Also, I think really noteworthy, and this is, Iran is sort of the best case to think about for the financial crisis, because the impact on GDP was small. The sanctions created, according to Torbat, a reduction of 1.1% in GDP on an annual basis. But the impact on the carpet industry, which was one of the major employers of women, was much more dramatic. And Torbat argues that the carpet industry, as a result of sanctions, was reduced to one-third of its former size. So you had a huge shrinking of this sector because it depended on exports and was impacted by the sanctions. And again, we saw in my earlier data, female labor force participation dropped, and then it rose. I'm not going to repeat this since I've already said it. Manufacturing was important. Carpet industry dropped. Oh, this point is also important. The carpet industry went from being 60% female to 40% female and then back up to 60% female. So you have a defeminization and then a refeminization, if these data are going to be to believed. I'm not sure if these data are to be believed, but that's another story that maybe we can go into in the question and answer period. And it's not so relevant for this presentation, but it's also important to realize that Iran went through structural adjustment in the 1990s, and they've had a shrinking public sector. And as in the case of Palestine, it was educated women who were doing most of the public sector employment. And they have the highest informal sector employment in the whole region of the Middle East. So the focus in the existing literature is on the ideological shift that happened. Everybody explains this drop from about 12% to 8% by arguing that it's due to the revolution, that basically the revolution, the conservative ideology, pushed women out of the labor market. And I am a little bit doubtful that can explain all of that drop. And what I argue instead is that sanctions played a role in pushing down female labor force participation, and also that there was also some migration shifts. I won't go into the second point. I'll mainly focus on the first point. So if you think about, as I mentioned before, the overall impact on the national economy was small, but 50% of female employment was in manufacturing pre-revolution, and the number of women basically was cut in half between the 1976 and the 1986 survey. If we assume a 30% decline in female carpet industry jobs, which is a conservative estimate, that alone could explain 2 percentage points of the drop in female labor force participation. So if these women were in carpet industry, they couldn't find any jobs, they became discouraged workers and dropped out, that would explain the drop in about half of the drop in the female labor force participation rate. And in the time remaining, I'll quickly go through the Palestinian case. The Palestinian case is very unique and tragic because of the way that Israel controls the borders. Unemployment in the region has been around 20 to 30%, and those are conservative estimates, and this is due to Israeli restrictions. Poverty rates have gone from 25% to 60% in the space of 3 years, and this is again because of this cutoff from the global economy in part, but also from the cutoff from the Israeli economy. And there's been a massive decline in the manufacturing sector. So I'm just showing you this again, how flat the Palestinian case is. That flat line actually hides even more disturbing trends, which are that women's access to wage employment has dropped considerably. So a lot of what's happened is women have left paid employment and they've entered subsistence agriculture. So although the rates look flat, the access to wage employment has actually declined considerably. And it's particularly less educated women who have lost jobs. And that's because many of the less educated women were in the textiles and apparel industry. They were subcontractors to the Israeli economy. And they basically lost those jobs as those jobs moved to other places. And this was partly because there was so little mobility that Israeli contractors weren't interested in investing anymore in the Palestinian economy. And this is particularly true of Gaza, where 17% of women were in apparel, and now it's down to 2%. In the meantime, educated women's employment has actually risen. So again, the line masks the fact that working class women have had less access to wages, whereas more educated women have had more access to employment. And it also masks the defeminization, particularly of the healthcare sector, where the healthcare sector was 10% of female employment. Now it's 5%. And it was true that half of all healthcare sectors were women. Now it's 14%. I'm told I'm out of time. I'm on my conclusion. So countries experience isolation provide insights into what downturn may do to women's employment options. Evidence of both a gender and a class component to negative economic shows links to the reduced access to the global economy. And I think that in some countries, the negative shock from the financial crisis is likely to be similar because of this link to FDI and exports. I'll make two more points. I found that the experience in Iran and Palestine were similar, that it was manufacturing that was really hurt and that there was a strong class implication and the defeminization. I think that if we talk about government sector, yeah, the government sector in Palestine has grown considerably, but the people who can get jobs in the government are very educated people. So if we think about government employment per se as the solution, that's not going to work. We have to think maybe about government stimulating other kinds of employment, but not necessarily expanding the government sector itself is the argument that I would make. And I'll just leave it at that. We can maybe go into my research proposals. I'm done. So if you have any questions, this is my contact information. Thank you.